We have people,
high people, who don't live here who are going and are missing this stuff. So I wanted to try and include, and James has been getting recordings of some of my stuff. I think Van was doing that for you. So let's get going on the trip itself. I did find out yesterday of a special treat. All y'all have your itinerary, right? I mean, you have one. Not, I have plenty. Day four is our last day in Galilee. And so they have arranged, Journeys Unlimited, for a special prayer service that morning on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. And it will include a choir, going to be singing some songs with us, and some special prayers that they have somebody who's going to lead us in that. So that's the only thing it means, other than that, is cool, is that our day will start sooner, earlier that morning. We have to be on the bus by 7:30 a.m., so breakfast a little earlier that day. And then we'll go do that, and then we leave there. I think we go to Armageddon and a couple of Nazareth. Yeah, Megiddo. So we'll be leaving the Galilee area and making our way towards Jerusalem at that point in time. Okay, so what I want to do now is...
Are we
going
to have
fish
and breakfast on the shore?
If you catch it. All right, so you've got your... Everybody has maps?
Yep.
So... I'm going to use the big one. Can everybody see this from over here? I don't know how to do it where everybody can see. Can you see? Can y'all see?
Yeah.
No? Well, just follow along on your map. I'll be easier anyway. But what I want to show you on this map here, this is a map of Palestine in the time of Jesus, and these colors on this map represent who the governor, so to speak, of the region is. So this is after Herod the Great had died. Herod the Great is the Herod of the infancy narrative in Matthew, who was killing the baby. All right? So he's called Herod the Great because he was one of the greatest builders that's ever walked the earth. And you'll see examples of that when we're over there. He died, however, in 4 B.C. So that presents the immediate problem with our historical understanding of when Jesus was born, doesn't it? So if he died 4 years before Jesus was born, it would have been hard for him to try and kill Jesus. Right? So, but basically what that means is, when they first numbered the years, with A.D. 0 being Jesus' year, they were wrong. Right? And this is in about the 8th century, I think, when they started doing all that stuff. So we've been off at least 4, maybe 5 years ever since. So you'll see terms like, instead of B.C. and A.D., you'll see B.C.E. and C.E. Right? And so BCE is before the common era, and CE is the common era. These numbers match that 4 BC being the year of Jesus' birth. Alright? So when we get to modern times, we don't worry about this. Right? But this is really about biblical counting of years, particularly in the early Jesus' life stuff. I'm going to move this back. Does that help? Okay, so... this map is after Herod the Great had died, and then the territory is split between two of his sons, and then eventually to a grandson, etc. So that's what these regions are. So the yellow is Archelaus, the green is Antipas, and that's where Galilee, most of Galilee is. This is Philip, I think, yep. And then this is what they call the Decapolis. So remember, this is a Roman Empire territory, right? So Decapolis is a Roman word, means 10 cities, right? Like metropolis, you know, that means city, the polis part. And so the Decapolis, they're not all on this map, they're not here, were 10 Roman cities in the same region. They just called them the Decapolis, just kind of lumping them in together. And in a couple of places are some of the absolute best archaeological digs of Roman cities, not in Rome. So, I think we're visiting one of those, if I remember right. We did when I went, and it's unbelievable. You can still see, you know, the aqueducts and the amphitheater and the homes and the bathhouses and the roads. The roads are incredible, these Roman roads. And they knew how to build roads. I mean, they angle the roads down where water's close off, and they knew their stuff. And So there's some examples of all that in here. So what we're going to focus on tonight is the first part of our trip is all in Galilee. So I'm going to go in the order that we're visiting the places, which is not by any means the order that Jesus visited them. Right? But we're going to look at the stories that go along the place tonight. So I want to orient you a little bit. So if you can see on the map, can you see? Okay. Sea of Galilee up here, Jordan River, Dead Sea down here. Okay? So the Jordan River flows from up here to this little lake into the Sea of Galilee, out from the Sea of Galilee, all the way down, empties into the Dead Sea. Okay? So that's where it empties into the Dead Sea. There are fish and birds, and just a little bit further, there's nothing. Okay. Right? Because the fish can't survive. And unless the birds want their fish season, they don't want the dead fish either. So nothing lives down in there. Okay? So, but all what you want to keep in mind is, all these stories, people bring this up all the time when I'm in Bible studies. So how long does it take them to get from this place to that place when they're walking most of the time? So this looks huge, but this is 20 miles right here. So about 3/4 of this 10. So it's 20 miles from Nazareth to Capernaum. Those are two important places in Jesus' life. We'll talk about those, some of those tonight. So, and then from Nazareth to Jerusalem would have been about 50 miles. So it's like walking to Pensacola. It'll take a little while. You're not going to do it in a day, but it's not months, right? Jerusalem to Bethlehem is like 7 miles. Jericho is like 8 miles. What? 50
miles.
Nazareth to Jerusalem. Approximately.
Where on this map is Tel Aviv in relation to?
Tel Aviv did not exist then, but it's in this area here for Jerusalem, right here. It's kind of almost due east.
West. Thank you. Way up to Galilee from.
Yeah, we're gonna take the bus to Galilee. So we got a little bit of bus ride first when we got there. But again, none of this is real long. Right? So, yeah, I mean, it's going around on fish.
Yeah.
The ride from Jerusalem to the Dead Sea, you see, it's just not that far. Actually, to get there, there may be other ways. The way I got there, we went up to Jericho, and then just came down on the shoreline.
And Qumran is where the Dead Sea goes.
Qumran is here.
On the Dead Sea.
Yes, on the shore of the Dead Sea. The place where we'll float is in that same general area, and then we'll come all the way down here to Masada. Masada is amazing. Okay? So, tonight, what we're going to look at is, if we get to all of it, Capernaum. Can you see Capernaum on your map?
Yeah.
So, in the northwest corner of the Sea of Galilee, just to the west of Capernaum, is Tabitha on your map? Just to the west of that, we'll talk about that tonight, I'll tell you why in a minute, hang tight. Tiberias is a little bit further south on the sea. So all this is on the Galilee side. You may have heard, I know you memorized my sermon, but recently I was talking about how Jesus went over to the pagan side of the lake, the Gentile side of the lake, and encountered people. This side, the Decapolis side of the lake was primarily non-Jewish, right? So up here around Capernaum, just northwest a little bit, are what's called the mountains of Capernaum. They're really just hills, and that's what we're going to talk about, the Mount of Beatitudes, stuff like that. That's one place to go. So it is kind of a hilly, rocky terrain, somewhat as it comes down to the lake. Things they call mountains, most of the time are not really mountains. They just kind of call hills. But some of them are really kind of not places you could grow anything, or kind of barren looking. You'll see all that there. But some of it's just plush and beautiful. Bethsaida is up here, just into this purple side. And then up here, Caesarea Philippi. Do y'all see that on your map? Caesarea Philippi.
Yeah,
no. Philippi is in Greece. Right. Caesarea Philippi is named after Philip, who was the governor of this area. He built it as his capital. Right? And there's a biblical event that takes place there. We'll talk about that tonight. Right? You'll notice a lot of these towns, villages, cities, names are Roman sounding, so they would name them after Roman emperors. Right? Especially going into the papal. So Caesarea, obviously Caesar, Philippi, the governor. There's another Caesarea over here on the coast. It was the first one, which is called Caesarea. Often they refer to it as Caesarea Maritima, Maritime, because they're on the sea, right? And Jesus doesn't go there with either of them. So there's almost no record of Jesus doing anything along the Mediterranean coast. There's one little incident he has, his name on the Sidon is up here, Tyre and Sidon. And he talks about them one time, and also he encounters a Canaanite woman near Sidon. But there's no mention of the water or the Mediterranean or anything like that. So he didn't chill on the water like we did. So anyway, that's what all those are. Nazareth is where Jesus grew up, right?
Right.
So you see just northwest of Nazareth, can you say that word or not, is Sepphoris.
Yeah.
Right, so Sepphoris is not in the Bible, but it's... The forest was a brand new city built around the time Jesus was growing up. And it was the Romans wanted to build a fortified city, kind of the seat of Galilean governorship, although Caesarea ended up in it. And so they built this city and they contracted most of their labor from Nazareth. So most likely that's where Joseph worked. Right? Carpenter, he built a city, and probably Jesus alongside him as an apprentice. Sepphoris is kind of a twin city of Tiberias. You see Tiberias on the lake shore? Right? Tiberias is the name of a Roman emperor, right? So it's named after him. It's another case where they wanted to build a new city, a more Roman city right there on the lake shore. There was a spa in that area, had a lot of warm springs. There's also one near Capernaum, we'll mention in a minute. And so they just kind of built the city from scratch. But Tiberias became a forbidden city for the Jews because it was actually built on the site of a Jewish graveyard. So they thought it was unholy. They didn't want to live there. So it became an almost completely pagan city. And then when there were wars after Jesus between Jews and Romans, etc., these two cities were in great conflict with each other during that time. So you had a lot of Jews in Sepphoris and Gentiles or pagans or whatever in Tiberias, and they fought. Tiberias became, over time, became a very large city, still is, and eventually became a predominantly Jewish city. And this is much like hundreds of years later when one of the Jewish leaders went in and kind of consecrated the land so they could then live there.
Which are the two cities that
fought? Sepphoris and Tiberias. So, you may have heard of Josephus. Right, he's the historian that we get most of our information about the wars and the destruction of Jerusalem and all that kind of stuff. Well, he was also a military guy in the Jewish army, and I believe he was in Sepphoris as the commander of the forces there. And when he saw that they were about to get their butts kicked, he flipped and went over to the Romans and allowed them to come in and peacefully take over the city during that time. There are a lot of revolts of the Jews against the Romans over and over and over again until they finally just washed all that.
What was his name?
Josephus.
Flavius Josephus?
I don't know if they had a first name.
Yeah.
I called him Joe. We were really close.
We get a lot of our information about the Romans time.
And during the first century, most of our historical data comes from him. And it's very detailed. He describes Eucharist. I mean, he does a lot. He has a lot of stuff he wrote. He talks about the wars and the fall of the temple and all that kind of stuff. Okay, so I just kind of give you some background, all that kind of stuff, and we're going to look now at some of these sites more particularly. So here's the one thing I don't know. Our itinerary, day one, fly, right? Day two, we arrive at Tel Aviv, transfer to our hotel in Galilee for dinner and overnight, but we've got time during the day, and it says, today we will be visiting sites from the Bible. doesn't tell me what sites, so I can't see what those are. But the next day, we're going to do a really cool thing, and that's take a boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. Okay? So there is a museum at Gennesar, which is just a location where they... the Sea of Galilee, by the way, is a lake. Not a sea. It's a freshwater lake. It's about 13 miles long, about 7 miles wide. So it's a good size lake, but it's a lake. Jesus would have called it the Sea of Gennesaret. You also will see it referred to as the Sea of Tiberias. So the name has changed a lot. Sea of Galilee is what most of our Bibles call it, but that's all the same thing as a lake.
So it's fresh water and then
The Dead Sea was created, the Mediterranean Sea used to come all the way over here back in the day, before my time. And then as the earth shifted, the Dead Sea got cut off from the Mediterranean Sea, so there really was no way for it to wash out from the above where it wanted to fall. So this is all fresh water. A lot of the plain flows into the Jordan River, into the lake. And you see all these, there's other rivers, all this stuff is flowing that way. So Jordan gets to be pretty big river after a little while. So the one thing about the Sea of Galilee is it has been the freshwater source for Israel forever. Right? I mean, remember, a lot of Israel is desert. Mm-hmm. And they've got to irrigate all their farmland, all that kind of stuff. And so they pump water out of the Sea of Galilee as their primary source. Just like Lake of Jordan, you know, they built like this, right? So, but they don't have algae issues. So, the lake over time just got lower and lower, and there was drought, etc. Eventually, they found in the mud a fishing boat, and they were able to carbon date that fishing boat back to Jesus' time. So they pulled it out of the mud and put it back together, and it's in this museum. So we will see that replica of a Jesus age fishing boat in the museum, and then we're going to go ride on one. So, or vice versa. I think we can see the boat first.
How big?
It's bigger than you think. It's like from here to that door.
Oh, my goodness.
Things like harder than that. So, shockingly, there are some entrepreneurs who said, you know what, I bet all these Christians want to ride on a boat and seem like they're disciples. Let's build some boat. So they took that model and built and replicated it on some fishing boat engines and stuff, but they look as close as you can to what a boat is doing, what it will look like. So we will go out on the Sea of Galilee and flutter around and cast our nets and sing some songs and all that kind of stuff. It really was one of the most special times I've felt.
The one that they pulled out, though, that lux, you see that one they pulled out of the month?
You're going to the museum.
Yeah.
We will cast a net into the lake.
Are you
having
pictures and all these?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like in the museum?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. There's not like, you know, paintings and stuff like that. Your experience is going to be Galilee and Jerusalem. Mine was the opposite. And I was so tired of the gift shops and the crowds and stuff in Jerusalem that when I got to Galilee, my experience was much better. Because although there are a lot of tours there, it's just a lot of different places. Not everybody's trying to cram into the Church of Holy Sepulchre at one time and that kind of stuff. And so being out on the Sea of Galilee with 40 other people, you know, it's really cool. It's really cool. They'll play music and, you know, a lot of fun stuff on that. So that's what we're going to do. So we're going to be, our hotel is in Tiberias, right? And so we'll head up towards Capernaum. And that's where the boat thing is, I think. Although Gennesar is not on our map. I don't think. It's just a little bound where the museum is. Y'all don't see on either one of them. Gennesar. You see it? Oh, is it? That's Gennesar. That's not the same one. Anyway, it's in that area. These areas are all close. You're going to stand on the shore. So many sites you're going to see, and you're going to see Tiberias, even though it's across the other side. I mean, it's not, again, the scale is not that big. All right, so after we do the boat ride, we're going to go to the Mount of the Beatitudes.
Same day?
Oh, yeah, we got a lot to do. This is a busy, busy trip. Okay, so the Mount of the Beatitudes. So, what are the Beatitudes? Yeah. Blessed are they. Right? Right. So, Capernaum, if you look at, let's see which map. The blue one. You see Capernaum?
Yeah.
So just a little bit north and west of Capernaum is the Mount of the Beatitudes. So the I think I told you, you could see some hills from Capernaum. And so the scripture in Matthew tells us that Jesus was up on a mountain and the people were all gathered there and he sat down and began to preach. Right? Remember that? Yeah, just like in the Life of Ryan's a better description of that. Let's go to Cheesemaker. That's not a description. You've got to be in a movie. That should be required before we get to it. Anyway, O'Brien. There's a few things that kind of come together on where we're going on the Mount of Beatitudes. One thing to keep in mind is that every place we go, somebody has built a church there. Right? And it's not always a new church, an old church. So, for instance, a lot of churches were built on holy sites by the Crusaders. So over that couple hundred year time frame that the Crusades were going on, they would find a holy site, they'd build a church on top of it. Then later, Muslims ran them out and destroyed those churches, and then later somebody else built the church, so it's just over and over and over again. So there's churches plopped on top of all these supposed sites that it goes to. On the Mount of Beatitudes, right, so you've got this kind of rocky hill area. So that's what I want you to picture, even though dust is not going to look like that when you get there. It's absolutely gorgeous what they've done there. And actually, this site has moved over a little bit from what we thought was the original. So, two things in the scripture, we'll look at those. But one is, do you remember the story about Jesus got up early in the morning, went up on a mountain to pray? That's the mountain. And if you also remember, we talked about this summer, that everywhere he went around the lake, these crowds kept following him, right? And they're climbing hill and dale and going through the barns, and wherever he went, there they were again, right? He could not get away from them. So that's the scenario when he gets the Sermon on the Mount. He's gone up there to pray, he's got to be by himself, and lo and behold, there's several thousand people there waiting on him. Yeah. So he sits down and starts teaching them. Okay? So those are the same place. Does that make sense?
Where's the mountain of the Beatitudes?
Just northwest of Capernaum. Right, you see Capernaum? It's in that general area, and it's not far. Alright, so in the 4th century, there was a Spanish nun named Egeria. You ever heard of Egeria? Egeria is one of my heroes. She went to the Holy Land and wrote diaries about her trip. E-G-E-R-I-A. So she went on pilgrimage to the Holy Land in the 4th century. This is the 300s, right? And what did I do with my phone? You know. Anyway, I'm recording somewhere. I don't know where it is. If you can't hear me. No, I moved it. Okay. I know it's in here somewhere. I hope you're listening wherever you are. Sorry. I don't know where it was. Yeah, well, it's got to be in the room. Stop recording anyway. Nope. It's in this book. Aha! I'm still going. Sorry about that. All right, so Egeria, her diaries are so cool because part of what she did was she went to Jerusalem during Holy Week and documented some of the liturgies that take place during Holy Week, and that's where we got the Easter Vigil from. So the first record of the Great Vigil of Easter being done in Jerusalem was written by her on her pilgrimage.
And she was a nun.
Yes, a Spanish nun. And so it was a long, 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 long time before we discovered all this, the writings of her, and went back to say, let's go back to our roots and start doing things like the Great Vigil of Easter and some of the Good Friday stuff that we do. So it came from her stuff. So she went to Capernaum and Tabgha, which is right next door.
which is also known as Peter's Harbor.
Peter's what?
Harbor.
Well, I see it on my little map.
Should be on.
Google Maps, though.
Yeah. So they're basically, it's almost a suburb of Capernaum. So she went there and she asked the locals, hey, you know where this Jesus guy preached that Sermon on the Mount thing? And so they took her to a grotto on a hillside near Padgo, which is next door to Capernaum, right? And there at Padgo, there are these hot springs that feed into the Sea of Galilee. That's important in a minute. And there's a terrace on a hillside that they said was the spot where the Sermon on the Mount took place. And you go up on that terrace, you can see all the Sea of Galilee, and there's this place underneath that for people to sit. So yeah, you can imagine that's where it took place. And so they built a church there right after she was there. And the church was there when she got there. And she said the walls of this church, past the walls of this church, goes to the public highway called the Via Maris. So the via means road, right? So all the Roman Empire roads are via something. Maris, that was one of the main Roman roads. Now the Via Maris was a very important trade route. It went from Egypt and cut all the way across here, right, off the tip of the Sea of Galilee, and then on up to Damascus, Syria, Persia, etc. So if you were trading, Egypt was a big trade center, Persia was, they're sending stuff back and forth to each other all the time. That's the road you went on. It's a big, wide Roman road, protected Rome by Rome. And also, as you went to different regions, you had to pay a toll. Right? They did not have sunbaths. So, who was collecting the toll? Who do you know was a toll collector from the Bible? Matthew. Right? He's a tax collector, but the story says Jesus came upon Matthew sitting in his toll booth. Right? Collecting a tax. So it was a tax for you to go through. And so he was sitting on that Via Maris right in the same area. That's what Jeria says. She saw the spot where Matthew used to collect his toll. Right? And that's when Jesus invited him to kind of follow me.
And we still
call
tolls,
are
we?
You still call tolls, right? Yeah. So all this stuff is happening in the same area, and Jeria witnessed a lot of it. So after that church was destroyed around the 7th century, and then the Franciscans built what we're going to see. Now, St. Francis of Assisi went to the Holy Land. It was quite an impactful time on his life. He writes about it a lot. Y'all know St. Francis, right? Mm-hmm. And so the Franciscans have always had a huge connection to the Holy Land and always have had a very active presence in the Holy Land. They still do. So they built this church in 1938. It's beautiful. It's octagonal, sits up on this hillside, and the grounds are just incredible. Beautiful green trees, flowers, this kind of stuff. Octagonal is eight-sided. How many Beatitudes are there in Matthew? Eight. Right? And there's stained glass windows in the church that depict the different Beatitudes. Blessed are the meek, and et cetera, et cetera. Right. Number eight also is a Christian number. We say Jesus rose on the eighth day, right, of the week, et cetera. So anyway, it's a gorgeous place that we'll get to see.
When did that?
1938.
And what's the name of the church?
It's the Church of the Beatitudes.
Is it really, or did you make that up? The Beatitude Monastery?
And we got here the first Beatitude?
Yes. Well, all this is day three, so I don't know what's going on day two. Day one is flying. Day two, we're visiting sites. So this is day three. I don't know where we're going to go on day two. Somewhere that we'll enjoy. All right? So turn to Matthew chapter 5. Well, don't do that. We'll run out of time. At your leisure, read the Beatitudes. Just to have that with you in your head. When we go. So I want to move on to tagline.
So we read Matthew chapter 5.
Chapter 5 of Matthew. Just remember this about the Sermon on the Mount. The Beatitudes is just a very small part of the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount is several chapters in Matthew. The Sermon on the Plain in Luke, which is the Beatitudes in Luke, is just the Beatitudes part. Right? And remember, they're a little bit different in Luke. And it's on the plain, so on the mountain. Who knows why Luke got it wrong? but whoever he may be, there's no place to go to the sermon on the plain. So this is where we're going. This is what we're going to say happened. Okay. So Tabgha is next door to Capernaum on the Sea of Galilee, on the Via Maris, right? Or on the north end of the lake. So we're about 8 miles north of Tiberias and about a mile west of Capernaum. And Tabgha, I may not be pronouncing it right, is Arabic for seven springs. So that there's these hot sulfur artesian springs in Tabgha. And they bubble up and there's steam and all this kind of stuff. A lot of minerals. And so there are fish in the Sea of Galilee that they call St. Peter's fish. You may have heard you can eat those, by the way. That were actually imported to the Sea of Galilee from more tropical waters. And so they congregate up there in that little corner of the Sea of Galilee because the water's warm from those springs. So when Peter and the guys are fishing, they're fishing out of Capernaum or Tabgha, and there's lots of fish in that spot, especially in the winter and spring because it's cold the rest of the lake. So they go up there where it's warm. So you could cast your net and fill it up with fish pretty easily. Right? So you know the stories of them doing it, and there's no fish, and Jesus said, hey, they're all on the other side, and cast on the other side, and fill their net up. And we're going to look at another story about that as well. Okay? So that, we will go there, which is also the site of these places, these are very short bus rides apart, right? So Tabgha is, there's a church at the site of the miracle of the fishes and loaves, right? The feeding of the 5,000. And there's a really cool chapel built there with a mosaic in the floor with fish and loaves, and it's really cool. And then also the primacy of Peter. There's a second church that talks about primacy of Peter's, Peter being where Jesus kind of gives him more authority than the other disciples have. And that's also an event that happens up in Caesarea Philippi, which we're going there as well on this day. We've got to turn around and go north for a little while. So Tabgha is where we're going to see miracle of fishes and loaves, the feeding of the 5,000, and then who do you say that I am? Question that Jesus asked and Peter saying you're on the side. That's also cataloging other gospels that's taken place in Caesarea Philippi, and we'll go there and see that. That in Matthew's, gospel, that version of the story, that's where they are. And it's when Jesus says to Peter, upon this rock I will build my church. That's in Caesarea Philippi. Okay? Alright, so that's Tabgha, maybe a city you have not heard of before. So let's look at a little bit at the story of Tabgha. I'm sorry, I did that backwards. The primacy of Peter is what happens in the Gospel of John. So turn to John 21, near the end of the Gospel of John. I finally achieved what I need from all my Bibles. That's a good sign.
Oh gosh, I was
the Old Testament. You're not going to find John in the Old Testament.
I wouldn't want to know that she was writing
it. Okay, so Gospel of John, chapter 21, verse 1 through 8. Somebody read that.
After this, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the sea of Tiberias, and he revealed himself in this way. Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, I am going fishing. They said to him, we will go with you. They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the beach, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, children, have you any fish? They answered him, no. He said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some. So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in for the quantity of fish. The disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his clothes, for he was stripped for work, and sprang into the sea. But the other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, but about 100 yards off.
Okay, thank you. Alright, so this is after the resurrection. So, this is the end of the story in John. And what have the disciples done? They're going back to work. Right? They're fishing again. So, they got Simon and his brother Andrew, James and John, sons of Zebedee. They were fishermen when Jesus called them. Walt Vine said, follow me. Right? Now this whole Jesus thing, maybe it's over, maybe it's not, I don't know, but we got to go back to work. We don't know what we're supposed to be doing, right? So they go back to what they've always done. That's why it's called Peter's Harbor, because this is the area that they're fishing in, right? And it's near Capernaum. So they're out on one of the boats, like the boats we're going to be on, and they can't catch anything, and there's this dude standing on the beach, and he says, hey, you don't have any fish, do you? Huh? And they say, no. So he says, cast the net on the other side, and they do, and there's too many fish, they can't even hold the net in, and that's when good old John, the disciple whom Jesus loved, said, it's the Lord. And then this really bizarre thing happens where Peter, who's naked in the boat, gets dressed before he goes in the water. I just won't ever understand that. But that's what he does. And then the other ones drag the fish in. Okay, so they come up on the shore. So somebody read 9 through 14.
When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals. There were fish on it and some bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish you have just caught. Simon Peter climbed aboard and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153, but even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. None of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead.
What are the other two times in the Gospel of John that Jesus appeared to his disciples?
When he
went
to the other room.
When he walked through the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right, Zach. Good job. Y'all get an A, the morning group flunk.
Did you notice that my truck that I tried to turn into a boat had the net on the right side positioned because that's what I was doing?
Typically correct, right? Good job. So why are there 153 fish?
That's some magic number.
That's
five. Wait, it's the magic number.
It is one of those magic numbers.
They had the nine.
You ever cast out nines, checking your math work? You know how to do that, right? So the best way to check your multiplication is cast out nines. You add across, you cast out your nines, and then you add down, and you cast out your nines, and as long as the sum matches that, is
it's
so matching.
Google it.
Yeah.
I still cast out nines when I'm checking. Cast out nines. So here's, so if you're going to cast out nines on this number, you add across. 1 plus 5 is, plus 3 is 9. You cast out the nines, that leaves 0. So 0 is the answer to that. You don't need to know anything else. That's what the 153 means. Nothing. But Google casting out nines, it will change your life forever. You'll never need a calculator again. So anyway, so they cast out the nines and ate the fish. So Jesus feeds them breakfast. It's the third time he's appeared to them, and then we get to the meat of the story. So let's read 15 through 19. 15 through 19.
When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to them, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my lambs.
Go through 19.
A second time, he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said to him, tend my sheep. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and to go wherever you wish. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go. He said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. After this, he said to him, follow me.
Isn't that interesting that the last words he speaks to Peter are the first words he spoke to Peter? Follow me. Okay, so you studied this passage before. You know, it's three times Jesus asking, do you love me? Peter denied Jesus three times, so this is seen as a way to redeem that act so Peter's not feeling like he had failed. Although Peter does feel a little irritated, which is very Peterish, right? At the end of it, I've already told you that I love you, right? But basically, it's called a primacy or primacy, everyone pronounce that word, of Peter, because Peter's the one Jesus is engaging in telling Peter, go feed my sheep, go feed my lambs, you're in charge. Right? And you're not called to be a fisher of fish. Remember I told you at the very beginning, I will make you a fisher of people. So you can put the fish down and go after the sheep. That's what Peter does. Right after that point. So there's a church on that site to remember that Jesus gave that authority to Peter, calling him out and telling him to go feed my sheep. So right next to you can almost walk from the church of the loaves and fishes to this church, which is a much smaller one, of the primacy of Peter, but they're supposedly these are the sites for us. So you're right on the shore of the city of Galilee. You're right on it. You can wade in from there.
It's near Capernaum?
Yeah. Yeah. Tabitha's like a mile west of Capernaum. But it's really kind of, when you go to these churches, you're not in the middle of a town or anything. You're just on the shore of the lake, and boom, here's a church and a bunch of buses. Here's another church and a bunch of buses. And you know, one cool thing about going is you encounter busloads of people who don't speak English. Yeah. I mean, French and Italian and German and Greek and, I mean, just everything. It's really
we're on our own bus, right?
Yes, I got verification. We are the only people on our bus. But we will be traveling. There'll be lots and lots of buses going lots of places. The Journey to Limited probably has more than just us going at the same time. So they'll have, you know, we may be eating in the same hotel. A lot of people still have opportunities to engage with some of us, which will be about 10 days of people really want.
How many is our group?
36.
And they're all from Plato?
No, we have some foreigners. Got a couple people from Mississippi, and somebody from Colorado is coming. From Panama City. We have four people from Panama City coming. And thankfully, they're all in the other town.
Yeah, that's good. Good.
Can the speak American?
Oh, yeah.
What church from Panama City are they from?
One is from St. Andrews. I don't know if they're all over this way. Okay.
I remember when the transfiguration, when Peter says, hey, let's build it, was that pretty much the mindset of, I mean, if they build churches everywhere something happens, was that really not as outlandish as I thought it was?
No, it's pretty outlandish.
Isn't it more like a stud or whatever, and they put piles of dirt on the roof and they're building a shrine after?
Yeah, Peter's deal is, I don't want y'all to leave. So I'm put up something to hang out for a while, right, a shelf. The literal translation of the first chapter of the Gospel of John, the word became flesh and dwelt among us, is the word became flesh and pitched a tent on us.
Right.
So that's what the Greek word means. And by the way, Mount Tabor is where the transfiguration takes place, which is right here near Nazareth. I don't know if we're going there or not.
Not a big deal. It's not
unusual. Well, it's unique to the Holy Land, but it just became the thing you do. Okay. And when we get to talk about Jerusalem, Church of the Holy Sepulchre, there's a whole story about Constantine's mom and all that kind of stuff deciding where it's supposed to be. Multiple churches have been built over on that site. There's incredible politics involved, as you can imagine, on that. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem is built over both where the tomb is supposed to be and Calvary. Supposed to be the church encompasses both of the, they're really close together, which just shocked me. But it makes sense that the tomb would be close to where you executed, but just in my brain, it was never that way. So I went over there. If that's the right spot, we'll argue about that when we get there.
Who keeps up in
the
churches?
Great question, and very complicated one. And as we talk about some of these individual churches, we're going to get into that. Okay. So we know the Franciscans have the Beatitudes Church. You know, there are specific groups that maintain each of these churches. Sometimes it's multiple ones, and that becomes a problem. But when you get to them, they'll talk a little bit about who they are. Somebody asked about the guides. We'll have the same guy for the entire trip. I have two guys when we went, one for Galilee, one for Jerusalem, Bethlehem, etc. They are unbelievable. They spent at least 3 years training before they're allowed to be guides. Most of them, and this guy may or may not be, I don't know, most of them are secular Jews. Which means they don't really practice their faith, but they're Jewish. But they know the New Testament better than any of us ever dreamed of knowing it. I mean, they know everything there is, and they can quote scripture to you. At this spot, Jesus said this. It's really impressive. Yes, and they communicate very well in English. There are some places they can't go. Bethlehem being one of them.
Because?
Jewish guys cannot go to Bethlehem.
Why?
Because it's a Christian holy spot, and it's Muslim, it's Palestinian-controlled land. So you go through a checkpoint on your way into Bethlehem. That's Palestinian checkpoint. And so they won't let the Jewish guys go. They have to stay. And then coming back the other way is an Israeli checkpoint, coming back into Israel. So that's how the thing's divided up over there, a lot of different places.
Is Bethlehem still a small town?
Yeah. It's a predominantly Christian town, although there's a lot of Muslims there as well. But, you'll see. It's not real big. Paige, you have a question?
Are you guys going to Tiberias?
Yes, we're staying in Tiberias. Tiberias is fine.
Okay, because it used to be forbidden.
Yes, but that's all been fixed a long time ago.
Yeah.
So a lot of these towns and villages you go into are predominantly Arabic, mm-hmm. not Hebrew, and not necessarily. Nazareth is primarily an Arabic town, mm-hmm. but they support the tourism there. Fantastic. That's their bread and butter, right? And so there's no issues with any of that. That there's only two checkpoints I had to deal with. One was going to Bethlehem, and one was going up on the Dome on the Rock. You know, the big gold dome on top, which is a mosque. Right, so that is Muslim-controlled land. You have to go through their checkpoint to go up there. And there's only certain times of day you can go.
And it used to be where the temple was, right?
Well, it's built on the Temple Mount. But it's up above it. It depends.
Yeah, because when I was there, we
couldn't go. I got to go. It depends on time of day. If they're having a prayer, call a prayer, you can't be up there unless you're Muslim. But if it depends on your timing. But if you go up there, you don't get to stay very long. But, it's cool.
Now, to go through these checkpoints, do we have to show, our passport?
Typically, the bus driver takes care of all that stuff. But,
okay.
They'll tell you. The day before, if you need to bring something like that, they'll tell you. Probably a good idea to travel with your passport.
Yeah, I always do anyway.
Yeah.
So some of these towns you said are Muslim or
Palestinian.
Palestinian controlled, even though they're right in the middle.
Well, Palestinian population is more Palestinian than Jewish. Maybe it's better with not controlled.
So there's plenty of Palestinian.
So let's go to the Golan Heights since you said that.
Yeah.
You ready to do that? Because the next stop. Well, we got to go to Capernaum first, right? Okay. Everybody loves Capernaum. Can y'all go another few minutes?
Sure.
All right, so Capernaum is one of the more important places in Scripture. So we know that Nazareth was where Jesus grew up. Born in Bethlehem, grew up in Nazareth, which fulfills the Scripture. He will be a Nazarene. But Capernaum is where he is living as an adult. Although he does go back to Nazareth, remember, that's where he's in the synagogue when he reads, they want to kill him when he preaches and irritates them. But no, yeah, exactly. It's when Nathaniel says there can't be the Messiah, nothing good ever comes out of Nazareth,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but Capernaum is also kind of a center place for Jesus and folks. Capernaum, again, is on that main road on the way from Egypt all the way up. from Capernaum, you're connected to a lot of different places.
Where did Lazarus live?
Bethany.
Thank you.
There are two Bethanys, but the one by Jerusalem is the one he's concerned about. Okay, so let's look at the scripture passage in Mark chapter 1. When I went the first time, somebody who had been before said, get you some dirt in Capernaum.
Get some dirt.
Bring it home.
Okay.
Get your rock or two from Capernaum.
Are you allowed to?
Yeah, you can put some dirt in a jar. I mean, I brought back water from the river and olive oil and some of that. Yeah. So, chapter 1 of Mark, verse 21 through 28.
They went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, Jesus went into the synagogue and began to preach. The people were amazed at his teaching, because he taught them as one who had authority, not as the teachers of the law. Just then, a man in the synagogue who was possessed by an impure spirit cried out, "What do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." "Be quiet," said Jesus sternly. "Come out of him." The impure spirit shook the man violently and came out of him with a shriek. The people were also amazed that they asked each other, "What is this? A new teacher? And with authority? He even gives orders to impure spirits and they obey him." News about him spread quickly over the whole region of Galilee.
Okay, so this is, in Mark, the first exercising of Jesus' ministry. Right? So, this is right after he's been baptized, and right after he has spent time in the 40 days in the wilderness for the temptations, and then he calls the first disciples. Right? So you see in verse 16, he's passing along the Sea of Galilee, you see Simon and Andrew, that's Peter, casting a net, "Follow me, I'll make you fish for people." They left, sons of James and John, sons of Zebedee, same thing. They follow him. The very next thing is they go to Capernaum. So that's where all the fishing boats and all that stuff, right? So he goes to Capernaum and goes into the synagogue there and preaches. And they were astounded by his teaching. So when you get to Capernaum, they have done a really great job excavating the synagogue. It's very, very cool. And it's a pretty big synagogue. And they have even dug down to where the original foundation of the synagogue was. And they have dated the kind of volcanic rock that they used for the foundation back to the first century. So this is the site of this synagogue. And where Jesus taught. And so you've got these black stones in the foundation, and above it are these white limestone. So later it probably got torn down or burned down or whatever, and they rebuilt it. And those are like fourth century. So it's been around for a really long time. And you can see kind of the shape of the walls, and you can see out over the hills and that kind of stuff. So you can really imagine all the people gathered there for Sabbath.
We're going there.
We are going. We'll be inside that synagogue. Don't have a roof. But we'll walk amongst those ruins and see and picture Jesus teaching. And the very first thing he does, the very first miracle Jesus does in Mark, is casting out a demon. And that's that story. Right? Oh, he has authority. Oh, he's been over unclean spirits. Right? So that's all in Capernaum. What's the very next story in Mark? So, verse 29. As soon as he left the synagogue, they entered the house of Simon and Andrew. Right? So Peter's house is there. Right? Now Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever. So, Simon Peter's married. Right? He has a mother-in-law. And she's sick. And he tells Jesus about her, and he goes and heals her. And then that evening at sundown, everybody who was sick in the town and who had demons in them, they start showing up and gathering in there, and he's healing people there. This is Peter's house. So we have excavated Peter's house. Maybe. Guess what's on top of it? A church. Right? So they built an eight-sided church over the site of where they is right down from it. It's very close to the synagogue, which is what the story says. Right? Left the synagogue, went to Peter's house. Right? They didn't catch a bus. They walked over to the house. Peter's going to put them up for the night. Right? So eight-sided churches were an original way of Christian churches to separate them from other kind of faiths. So that's an eight-day thing. So what's cool about this, it's not huge. And they have, it's an active church. They have worship services. You can't go to them unless you make a reservation. So it's not practical to think that, well, we can go in the church and see it and walk around. They've got a lot of artifacts in there. But the other cool thing they have is a glass floor. Mm-hmm. And down underneath it, you can see where they excavated the actual house, the original house. And you can kind of get an idea about what a first century house in Galilee looked like. The kind of furniture they would have had and set up with the rooms and all that kind of stuff by looking down through the floor. So it's a neat spot for us.
But we don't get to just...
Yeah, we get to go and see that. We just can't go to a worship service.
Oh.
And when that in there, you can't just show up and say I'm here for church, because I imagine it's people reserve spots way in advance.
Like here.
Yeah, just like here, just like same
thing. Yeah.
Thank you. All right, can we go one more place? Y'all want to
yeah,
stop?
Sure.
You okay? But we're still on day three.
We are.
Yeah. So while I'm talking, turn to Matthew. So blah, blah, blah. Where is it? 16?
I know.
No, that's not right. Yeah. Matthew 16, verse 13. When Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked the disciples, who do people say that I am? Right?
Right.
So that's way up here.
Yeah, that's pretty far.
Yep. Well,
18 miles.
From Capernaum, it's about 20 miles. Okay? So, but it's within the district of Philip. That's why it's called Caesarea Philippi. He's the governor of this area. And there's a lot of both Jew and Gentile who live in that area.
Is still Israel now today?
That's probably in Syria. Mm. Here's the cool thing about it. On our way there, we're going to go to the Golan Heights. You've heard of the Golan Heights?
No.
If you study the 67 war, Six-day war, and stuff like that, you'll see the importance of the Golan Heights from a military standpoint. But it's up in the hills. And I don't think we're stopping there, but when we went to a bunker that the Israeli troops had, and I mean a real bunker, and you can see over to Syria. So they could see the Syrian army coming. Mm-hmm. And think that they were able to defeat them. It's really miraculous how they were able to win that war, because they were so badly outnumbered. Well, that's on the way. We'll pass that on the way. I don't know if we'll stop or not. So then you come over to Caesarea Philippi. I guess it's still within Israel, because I don't think we've had to do any border crossing at all on this trip. Some trips take you to Jordan and places like that. I don't think. Must not quite be in Syria.
Right there.
Yeah. So, Caesarea Philippi is where Jesus said, who do they say that I am? And Peter, you're the Messiah. Right? Gets it right. And Matthew is where Jesus says, you are now called Peter, which means
the rock.
Thank you. And upon this rock I will build my church. Right? So this is a very important verse, especially the Catholics. Right? Peter is given the keys to the kingdom, right? That's what Peter's symbol is, always the key, or an upside down cross, because he was crucified upside down, right? And is that in Matthew 16, where Jesus says, what you loose in heaven will be, in earth will be loose in heaven, what you bound on earth will be bound in heaven, which is what the church has given the authority to the clergy to like pronounce that solution, in the sense that kind of stuff, comes from Peter being given that authority by Jesus. And then apostolic succession meeting all the way down to the bishops. That's where that theology comes from.
He's also the cornerstone, so the rock is cornerstone and similar
things,
like similar
Jesus is the cornerstone, not Peter.
Jesus is the cornerstone.
And that's the 12th one of the Psalms.
Okay. Yeah. When we get to Jericho, are there any of the walls?
I don't think, no, if we're stopping in Jericho, actually. I don't think we drive by it. But yeah, if we do, you can see they've excavated the walls. but it keeps tumbling down. So. Yes, people keep blowing those horns. If they quit blowing those horns, we can see the walls. Okay, so Caesarea Philippi is that spot. Of course, there's a church there to commemorate Peter's confession of faith and that he will be the rock. All right? So that's the end of that day. We go from Caesarea Philippi, we drive back to Tiberias for dinner and sleep.
That's all one day?
All this that I just covered is one day.
It's going to be a long day.
Yeah, but keep in mind the travel part of this is not long from site to site. So you can cover it. The longest gap is going up to Caesarea Philippi and back.
Seven. Right now.
Well, with daylight same time it changes. So.
Yeah.
This weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sunday
night
to
2 a.m. England's 5.
Did they go to Nazareth to live because that's where Mary and Joseph lived to begin with?
What a great question. Maybe. Maybe not. Well, it's because we don't know.
Oh.
But the scripture says they went to Nazareth because it needs to fulfill the Old Testament prophecy that the Messiah will be a Nazarene. You know, he wasn't born in Nazareth. But most likely, that's where Joseph lived. Mary is not from Nazareth, but she's from nearby there. We're going to go by Mary's well on our way to Nazareth. We'll talk about that next time. So a place where she would have drawn water and stuff like that is something I added because I liked it when I went. They didn't have it on there originally. It's just a stop on the way, so it doesn't waste any time doing that. So Mary is supposedly from, it's on this now. It's not. I think it's on yours. Near Nazareth.
Okay, Caesarea Philippi, is that still there? Is that still the name?
No, the name is starts with a B. Benias? I think that's right, yeah, Benias. Good job. The